Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome in. It's the Lions 24/7 podcast. I am Tyler Donahue. He is Sean Fitz, and we are back with another episode previewing this matchup between Penn State and Ball State. 3:30 kickoff in Beaver Stadium. We hope you caught our second episode of the week that dropped just yesterday on Wednesday. Steve Wiltfong, who you of course know as 24/7 Sports National Recruiting Director, also did a great job of providing us a rundown of what Ball State brings to Beaver Stadium. This is a team, may surprise many of you, that brings an 8-game win streak on the road to Happy Valley. Penn State, of course, working with a 5-game win streak. And Sean, before we get into our conversation, I want to remind our listeners that we are also available on video format now up on YouTube. Easy to find this page. It's just that Lions 24/7 is the channel. Encourage you to subscribe, check out our content. If you prefer just sticking with what gets you to this podcast, that's okay too, but want to put that out there. Sean, we're going to be back at Beaver Stadium with a lot of old friends.
We've done, what, 3 podcasts in the last 3 days, so I'm ready to change it up and actually watch some football instead of talking about football. So it'll be nice to get back out there. Nice to see Beaver Stadium. Beautiful day in the forecast. I don't think there's been much better over the last couple of years, and to have fans back is just going to be an exciting time.
Absolutely, and we'll look forward to seeing everybody that's going to be before the game. All the grand entrances that happened with the Penn State game, and all the things that we severely missed last year when it was a quiet place to go to on Saturdays for those games. We got some game storylines to get into. Of course, you heard a lot from Steve Wiltfong. If you want to get a big breakdown of Ball State in this matchup, certainly suggest checking out the last episode if you did miss it. But we're going to focus in a lot on Penn State here before we get to our predictions and before we get to really looking at this game. Been a busy week, a lot of availability here. That's the case Tuesdays, Wednesdays, into Thursday morning with what we do covering Penn State on a daily basis. A lot of players, a lot of coaches. I wanted to get to a few topics here, Sean, before we dive into the matchup. And I want to start with the fact that there is nobody on this roster, and I'm including Jaquan Brisker on that generated more buzz during these discussions this week than Arnold Ebikadi, the Temple transfer who had himself a day in Madison.
Oh, he was fantastic. What an addition so far. And usually you get that first game and it's against an Idaho or something like that, and somebody breaks out and you think, oh, okay, Penn State's got something here in this one. To do that against Wisconsin, I know their left tackle was a little bit hobbled, but AK made him look silly, to be honest with you, at times. So his presence was definitely necessary, especially after the injury to Adisa Isaac. But he was great. Everybody around him seems to have pulled on him. And that's the thing about those two transfers up front, those two defensive linemen with AK and Derek Tangelo, is everybody seems to love him. Just like, not just they're playing, and it's great if they're playing well, but personality-wise, fit-wise, seems to be a really, really good start to their Penn State career.
We've been hearing about that for a long time, dating back to the early stages of spring practice, about how Tangelo and how Ebikadi gelled with the rest of this roster, especially in that position group. We heard from John Scott this week, reinforcing a lot of that. Going to Jaquan Brisker, though, of course, who generated plenty of buzz in his own right on last Saturday against Wisconsin with what his teammates called the Warriors performance. When you look at Brisker through the film, it's one thing, but when you hear about what he meant to this win away from on the sideline in communication, it adds a different layer of his value to this team. We know he's a very impressive football player. We've had heard a lot about his leadership really emerging here in year 3 with the program that, of course, resulted in team captaincy. But just from this game alone, what we've heard from his teammates, from coaches coming out of it, about his ability to communicate during the game, even when he was sidelined dealing with some injuries, keeping an eye on the game, seeing what the tendencies were for Wisconsin. He's talked about this. It's like on Madden, he said, when someone's calling the play over and over because it keeps working, he felt like it was coming with Jake Ferguson. He reacted. He came away with the interception. Penn State had to come up with another defensive stop, but that should have been really the one that slammed the door shut on Wisconsin. And Sean, ultimately, when you hear that communication, that leadership at that position in the back end of your defense, it's the kind of talk when you combine that with his trust in place in Jair Brown that we have not heard applied to a safety tandem at Penn State in quite some time.
When you have safeties that can just turn the ball and turn it the other way, I mean, this guy will go out and make plays for you instead of waiting for plays to come to it. And Penn State's had some pretty good safeties, but they really haven't had that guy, that All-American type guy that can play both the run and the pass. You know, we've seen Mark Salen was fantastic. He was more of a guy that, you know, he's playing linebacker in the NFL right now for a reason, played the run really well. But it's one of those things where he just brings so much as an all-around player. And you think about his journey, and this is a guy that ended up at Lackawanna because his academics were terrible coming out of high school. And that's a maturity thing. And then you look at a lot of these guys that end up going JUCO. And it's a lot of it has to reflect on their approach to academics, especially early in their career. That's definitely a maturity thing. When he got to Penn State, you know, he thought that he should have played right away. He's come around very much in the last 3 years just to ascend to this spot, not only as a leader, as a player on the field, but also in that locker room. So you really can't say enough about how far he's come. You know, he's still got work to do, and you know, he wants to be in that upper echelon of college safeties. You know, you watch Kyle Hamilton from Notre Dame the other night, and he was just incredible. Brisker, can he be at that level? I don't know. I think Hamilton's probably a top five pick, so I don't think Brisker's there, but he could really get to being a fringe round one guy or being a round two guy or something like that. And that would be an amazing transition. And it would be a good sell job for James Franklin and company, who got him back to come or got him to come back to school for a fifth year.
Yeah, a good. I mean, there's a lot to like about what it could mean for your ability to recruit with Anthony Poindexter up front with John Scott and what they're doing. And also, you know, next offseason, transfer portal is going to do its thing again. And if you can point to guys who came in, played right away, started right away. This is not Jaquan Brisker, of course, but going to some of the new additions, that there's a lot that you can build off of from the early performance. We'll see if it can extend over the course of 12, 13 games here for Penn State. Looking at Ebikade one more time. Hey,
before you get into that one, the Poindexter thing is funny because Brisker was good last year, but he obviously had faults, especially early in the season, was coached by Tim Banks all of a sudden you bring in Poindexter and he's this guy. How much did Poindexter have to do with it? It's hard to say, but you can sell it in the fact that he came in, took a good safety and made him an All-American. And that's a quick turnaround that you haven't had at safety the last couple of years. We look at the struggles that Penn State has had recruiting Derek Davis, recruiting a bunch of these safeties that and moving corners and, you know, just kind of fiddling along and trying to fill in with safety. And now all of a sudden you've got a chance to sell it. They've got a pretty good group of safeties in this class right now. And if Poindexter sticks around and continues to develop like this, all of a sudden that spot that was a weak spot on that defensive recruiting chart is, you know, could be attractive to a lot of people.
Brisker, Brown, Ebikade, none of them had Power 5 offers coming out of high school for different reasons in each circumstance, of course. But in Ebikade's circumstance, he was playing linebacker. He was undersized, very prolific production at the high school level, but much different player than he was even last year on the field for Temple, about 20 pounds heavier. And he has maintained and really built on his ability as an explosive athlete off the edge. There is a lot of respect right now sticking at defensive end for what Jesse Lucchetta is doing for this program right now. Well, he's not going to be sticking at defensive end in the first half. This Saturday, he'll be playing Mike linebacker with Ellis Brooks following that fourth quarter ejection at Wisconsin. Going to be sidelined until the third quarter this Saturday. That means Jesse Lucchetta backs off from defensive end, goes and plays middle linebacker. We'd expect Jesse Lucchetta to move on up back into a three-point stance after this after Brooks gets back in, I should say. But I think there's just a lot of respect and appreciation that you hear this week about Jesse Lucchetta preparing to be a starter in two different roles, showing up in a big way at defensive end last week, and then being there when you needed somebody to step up at Mike. It's nice to be able to call upon someone who started every game for you last year at linebacker.
And given how thin that room is at linebacker, you know, an injury or a targeting or something like that can deplete that group really quickly. Having this experience against Ball State, I think, is going to help him. You know, Ball State did run the ball well last week, 220 yards on the ground against Western Illinois. So they're going to probably come right at him and see what he's able to do. And, you know, it'll be interesting to watch his development there. But, yeah, his leadership is unquestionable. You know, he's the neat roommate, as Jahan Dotson called him last night. So he's a man of many talents. He's been a guy that's been really a poster child for this program for the last couple of years, and to see him start shining on the field, no disrespect to what he's done in the past, but you know that what we saw last week was just on a completely another level.
Another member of that 2018 recruiting class was PJ Mustafa, and he came in, played right away at defensive tackle. But now year four for him, and year three where he's essentially in a starting role full time for the last 2 years. A lot of praise thrown his way from John Scott Jr. here on Thursday morning, Sean. Not only was it about PJ Mustafa setting the tone as a vocal leader, which we totally expect now. He's picked for a captain for a reason. It's been inevitable, it feels like, that he was going to be a team captain for this program. But he played a ton of snaps. And this is a guy who's now 325-ish after being 300 pounds last year. You wondered how that approach would work out. And it was spectacular.
He's got a belly on him right now. It's pretty funny when you take into account, you know, we've talked about the added weight and everything like that, but for most of those guys, you think you know, you get bigger, you bulk up a little bit, but he's got a little bit of a belly on him. And when I was there watching in preseason, I'm like, is this going to be something that slows him down? Because he's always been, you know, a pretty dynamic athlete for that position. And it's funny because it doesn't make any sense. Like, you add that weight and then you play the game that he played with the conditioning that he had, where he played most of the snaps there at defensive tackle. Kudos to PJ for proving people wrong on that one, because if you were just sitting there standing on the sideline watching him, you think maybe this is going to hurt him. Maybe he's going to go in the direction where you're not going to be able to rely on him to be a dynamic player, to play all these plays. And turns around and does the exact opposite. So kudos to PJ on that one. I think he's a tremendous player. Continue to be challenged with that running game, as we mentioned earlier, a little bit with Lucetta.
Putting on 25 pounds in a matter of 6-7 months is very different when you're a Power 5 football player working in that structure than the average person like Sean and I. And by the way, PJ Mustafa, John Scott talked about during that final drive for Wisconsin, five plays in, he wanted to check on Mustafa, wondered if he was gassed, did he need to come to the sideline. Pretty adamant no from PJ to stay on the field, and that paid off for Penn State. Really a strong start for a guy that they need to be the anchor up front for them. Speaking of defensive linemen, Akeem Beeman, follow up with John Scott Jr. Nothing new there. He referred to James Franklin's comments from Tuesday and added he is unavailable right now. So this is a guy, again, we thought maybe in the 2D, maybe even a starter at defensive tackle. We talked about defensive end early in the offseason. Right now, not a factor for this defensive front. And generally speaking, John Scott says, as the season rolls on, you're going to see a lot more guys involved on the defensive front. It was one of those situations where you had a lot of top-heavy snap distribution on the defensive line. And really, you can apply this logic to a bunch of different positions. You're going from on the road at Wisconsin to being able to play a few more comfortable matchups here in the coming weeks in Beaver Stadium, and that should be able to get them a chance to see what they have beyond those, you know, top three or four guys at each position, and start to build out a rotation that works for John Scott Jr. and keeps guys like PJ Mustafa fresh.
And you won't have Lucetta at defensive end in the first half, so you'll go with Smith Vilbert playing a backup, Zariah Fisher, Amin Vanover we saw in short yardage last week, and then you move inside, you've got guys like Fatur Mamalba and Keziah Izzard. There's a bunch of those defensive tackles in there, so be interested I think at times with these MAC teams, and you don't want to take them for granted because this is a MAC championship team from last year, but you will see more of those rotations. You will see more revolutions where maybe four guys on, four guys off early in the game, especially for an 80-degree game, which should be a really nice day for the fans, but the players might want to turn it down a couple of degrees. But yeah, I think you'll see guys like that getting into the game more often when it's still in doubt, and getting some quality experience.
A nice start here would be to make sure Ball State doesn't have the ball for 42 minutes and runs almost 100 plays. Because if that happens again, there's major problems. I think you can probably avoid that kind of a toll on your defense physically in this matchup. But When we look at offense, Sean, the kind of the one thing that stood out in a big way for me, talking to guys like Jahan Dotson and kind of following up on a conversation we had with wide receivers coach Taylor Stubblefield just a few weeks ago, is Keandre Lambert-Smith and what we saw in game one overcame a drop and then ended up making a 52-yard catch that was huge for the team. It was part of that missed field goal drive, so it didn't result in points, but it was a big moment opening things up for this offense. Four catches, 71 yards. And everything you hear, including from Keandre Lambert-Smith himself, is that this momentum that he has is tied to his maturation. He went so far yesterday to tell us that when he came to campus in January of 2020, he was mentally weak. And that is a big statement from Keandre Lambert-Smith, who is about as confident as any high school recruit I've encountered.
I saw this or I put this on our board earlier today, but if he drops that ball last year, he dropped that the sideline pattern or whatever. And if he drops that ball last year, he's out. I mean, his head's out of the game. Still thinking about that one. He turned around this week, caught the 50-some yard deep ball and turned it into a big positive. Ended up with 71 yards receiving on four catches. That's quite a turnaround. So to get there mentally, to have that maturity that, and to admit that's where you were at a year ago and this is where you're at right now, it's a great step forward, especially with the youth that goes along with Parker Washington there. And you know, I don't know what they're going to do at depth beyond those three guys, but those guys have stepped up and really, really made, asserted themselves as essentially redshirt freshman as Keandre Lambert is a true sophomore, but didn't play a ton last year, even though he started some games. So I'm really interested to see. I've always been a big Keandre Lambert fan, always Same been here. Competitive, always been athletic, quick. I mean, we talked about that shuttle endlessly when he was being recruited. So he's got the tools. It's just about putting it together upstairs. And that seems to be coming along pretty well.
And part of what I loved about him was that competitive streak, that passionate nature. But you know, James Franklin said after practice on Wednesday, when I asked him about this, he said it just was a matter of making sure he was leveled out. It couldn't be peaks and valleys. It couldn't be him getting in one-on-one kind of battles when you had 11-on-11 football being played. And that's what's happening right now for him. It's a small sample size through just 1 week, but if he continues to produce and be a threat as that third wide receiver, you're talking about a heck of a trio here for Penn State. And you're right. What is beyond those three guys? There's a lot of questions there. Cam Sullivan Brown is the veteran that we continue to talk about there. Yeah, he popped up a little bit. There weren't many reps that went around in the game, but some of them did go to Winston Eubanks, a walk-on player, extremely productive at the Division II level with Shippensburg, decided to take a chance on himself as a senior, joined this Penn State program, not on scholarship. And right there on the road in Wisconsin, he's involved, and it certainly sounds like, you know, Jahan Dotson thinks he's going to be a part of the plan moving forward.
Remains to be seen what part of the plan what that means as being part of the plan. Eubanks obviously worked his way onto the field, which is pretty impressive in itself, being a Division II transfer. But you've got Harrison Wallace, you've got Liam Clifford, these guys that can work their way in as true freshman scholarship guys. And we did not see much of Cam Sullivan Brown. We didn't see, I don't think, any of Daniel George, even though he made the trip on Saturday. So those
Marquise
guys have
Wilson not out there as well. And he's a guy that we've been keeping tabs on there, right?
Yeah, and that makes sense to me because Wilson, you know, you got that position switch, and then all of a sudden you're going to go on the road. Those reps are going to tighten up anyway. So if you're going to learn to take your first reps as a wide receiver, you'd rather not do it on the road against the top 20 defense or a top 10 defense or something like that. So I get that. I expect to see him this weekend. Maybe not in a huge role, but in the sense that we're going to probably see more receivers on the field. Like I said, they tightened up at receiver. They tightened up at running back with Noah Cain getting most of those snaps. They tightened up at corner big time. It was all Joey Porter Jr. and Tariq Castro Fields. You know, it's a little sprinkling here and there of Kalen King, but he probably played less than we would have forecasted based on his spring and his summer. But they just wanted those veteran guys out there or guys that at least have experience, because we say veteran guys and then we say Parker Washington's a sophomore, Keandre Lambert-Smith's a sophomore. So I think we'll see that open up a little bit and give a chance to get some other guys on the field and actually make some plays instead of just, you know, blocking for a screen or something.
You say veteran guys, and then you remember that Keandre Lambert-Smith, Parker Washington have never played in front of a packed Beaver Stadium. They've been there as recruits. They've experienced it sitting in the stands, but have not encountered this. And this is a great opportunity here for Penn State to get back at it in front of the home crowd. A long time coming. You can tell there's a lot of excitement. Every week it's the 1-0 mentality. This game's like the last game, and the next game will be like this game. It's the most important game in our world. But there's something extra here as they're getting to reunite with the Nittany Lions Nation in Beaver Stadium. 3:30 kickoff. Penn State number 11 now in the Associated Press Top 25 poll. Ball State among those other receiving votes. They're technically number 40. 8-game win streak. The 2020 MAC champions, Steve Wiltfong, had a lot to say about them last time around. They got two teams here feeling pretty good about themselves. Penn State winning on the road at Wisconsin, coming off of a 4-game win streak to close last year. And Kent State, it was not a very impressive opener for them, I would say, and a much different opponent. But they're 1-0, and they've got that 8-game win streak as well.
Yeah, and this isn't a pushover. I mean, this is a good Ball State team that should compete in the MAC once again. Obviously, a big win over Buffalo last year to win the MAC. So this is not a team that's going to come in and feel that this one is too big for them or they won't have a shot. Obviously, they're going to play the underdog role back against the wall and do all that kind of stuff this week. But there's some talents and spots there. Penn State should have the talent advantage overall, or definitely does have the talent advantage overall, and should be able to maybe impose a little bit more will than they did against Wisconsin, especially that front seven from Wisconsin. So, it's certainly not a pushover, but you get back in front of that Beaver Stadium crowd, it does mean something. We saw that last year. It meant a lot to those guys that there was no fans there. They did not have that energy to play off and feed off. But Kent State, certainly no pushover. Penn State is going to have to be on their game, and I think that they have an opportunity to put up some points. They have an opportunity to get a quick start and do some things. This is a Ball State team that needed, 24 second-half points last week to beat Western Illinois. So slow starts are abound early in the season. So if Penn State can get off on the right foot and keep Ball State on its heels, they could be in shape for a really good day.
Yeah, that was a 7-7 game against Western Illinois at halftime last week. And Ball State coming to town. I mentioned this last week with Penn State going on the road to play Wisconsin. It's only fair I do it again. And really more emphasis here because you've got a team coming from the group of five. They played at home against Western Illinois. This is their first road game. Ball State doesn't face many road games in this environment, but you're talking about a team that hasn't seen much of a crowd, just like Penn State's hadn't seen much of a crowd until last Saturday. Here it is. Hello, Beaver Stadium. You're going to encounter a group of fans who riled up players and coaches. And again, this feels like it's fortunate for Ball State. They have a very veteran quarterback. I'll talk about him in a second, because that gives you, you'd think, a bit of a steady hand on your offense going into a matchup like this. But even with that in play, this is a major buzzsaw kind of atmosphere that Ball State is going to encounter.
Yeah, and you're going to see that for a lot of schools, especially the smaller schools going to big schools. And I know, a lot of FCS schools had success last week. And, I think that's something to keep in the back of your mind if you're Penn State. But this should be a different style atmosphere. You made a great point there. Drew Plitt, the quarterback, second team All-MAC guy last year, fifth-year senior, very experienced guy. That will help them out. That will definitely get those guys under control. He was able to turn that team around last year and over the last couple of years and get them where they needed to be, which is top of the MAC. So impressed with what he brings to the table. He's got some good targets to work with. Penn State's defense, they were worked hard last week. They're not going to get that much time to rest. It's certainly not going against the caliber of offensive line that Wisconsin threw at them, but Penn State's going to have to be on their toes, get to the quarterback and try and rattle them, knock them off schedule.
Yeah, Plitt had a couple touchdown throws last week without an interception. He's a guy, I think I referenced this stat last episode, almost 7,000 career passing yards for Ball State. He's been a big part of their emergence in the MAC. And when you look at the last time he played a Power 5 conference, you've got to go all the way back to September of 2019. They played NC State that year, 35 of 57, 333 yards, one interception. They also played Indiana in their opener that year, which they also lost, 26 of 41, two touchdowns, one interception. So it's not like he was a disaster when he faced a Power 5 opponent, but this is a different Penn State team with a defense that's really vibing and a crowd that's really going to want to get after it. I think if they have any hope here, they're going to need to get a lot out of a guy that Steve Wiltfong highlighted during our discussion. And that's their wide receiver slash wide out slash slot guy slash a guy who can be a force as a runner. Justin Hall really coming off an impressive performance. And he's got to be priority number one on who you stop for Penn State's defense.
No doubt. The secondary not particularly tested last week against Wisconsin. They'll get a chance to chase around a really quick guy that's going to get a volume of targets his way. So that secondary, I don't want to say they're going to be under more pressure against Ball State, but you know that there certainly is that scenario where they're going to be letting up some catches and Ball State can move the football and get some first downs and might be frustrating a time or two, but I think that the talent's there. And of course, when that ball goes in the air with this secondary, they got a chance to go back the other way, which is you haven't been able to say that about a Penn State secondary for a while like this.
No, that's exciting. And also, unlike the Wisconsin game, I don't think we're going to be looking at a 7-7 slugfest in the third quarter. This is a game that if it goes according to plan and what I think our predictions are going to line up, you should be forcing Ball State to let it fly and take some chances downfield. Now, that's going to set the stage for a guy like Justin Hall to do some things against you and maybe spring a big play that gives Ball State some momentum and anything they can do to put the crowd out of the game, and probably not out of the game, but put the, you know, just to extinguish some of the excitement in the crowd is a big deal. Justin Hall is the guy who can do that. But I think right now, like you said, this is a defensive secondary that beware when you're throwing the ball downfield there. And if this is a situation where Ball State's, you know, throwing the ball 80-90% of the game in the second half, there certainly will be opportunities for turnovers. Their goal for the Penn State defense collectively, 3 turnovers per game. They hit that mark in week one. They'd love to do it again here on Saturday.
And buddy, I just got excited. I was looking at Drew Plitt's stat page. He had 4 punts last year. So the quick kick is in play this week. So put 3 of those inside the 20. So the quick kick, watch out for the quick kick this week.
I that's going to pop up. Now it definitely is going to pop up because you noted it. What else is going on for the Penn State defense here since we've been talking about Ball State's offense? 3 levels impacted by personnel situations here for Penn State, Sean. Ellis Brooks, as we mentioned, on the sideline until the third quarter. That means Jesse Lucchetta leaves defensive end. There's a void there at defensive end now. Lucchetta, how's he going to look at linebacker? He looked a lot faster at defensive end. He looked a lot more effective at defensive end than he had at linebacker during his earlier stages of his career. So how's that going to look for this defense? And then additionally, Jonathan Sutherland likely to see extensive action again at the safety position as you know the next guy in there. If something happens, we saw Brisker sideline quite a bit last week. In this case, I just don't think you can count on seeing Keaton Ellis based on everything we've heard over the course of this week.
Yeah, Keaton Ellis in the practice jersey once again, which was the indication last week that he would not make the trip. Jonathan Lovett also in the practice jersey. No Hakeem Beamon at practice last night. That Ball State rushing attack, they ran 40 times last week for 220 yards. So 5.4 a carry should be a little bit lower this week, but they have the opportunity to bust a couple of those. Carson Steele was the backup running back that Steve mentioned from Mr. Football in Indiana. 7 carries, 79 yards and a touchdown last week. And Plitt ran the ball 5 times for 18 yards, which doesn't seem like a lot, but that could be a first down or two if he's scrambling around and making the most of his opportunities there. 17 of 28 last week against Western Illinois for 188 yards and 2 touchdowns. So they'll throw it around. I don't think they're going to throw it over top of you. They might try, but I don't think they're going to really have most of their passing success down the field. So I wouldn't be shocked to see, you know, a similar approach to what we saw Penn State do at the end or in the second half last week against Wisconsin, where you're trying to test the perimeter, trying to make guys miss and trying to rely on guys missing tackles and getting upfield and moving those chains.
Yeah, another receiver to be aware of with Justin Hall being more that elusive, shifty threat. Johines Tyler, which is a tremendous name. Johines Tyler.
Amazing name.
He productive player last year. He was averaging more than 20 yards per reception during the 2020 season, 8 touchdowns. He's a bigger guy, Sean. So he's kind of balancing out that wide receiver duo, 6'3", 200 pounds plus. So another test for the Nittany Lions there. And with Plitt, you're not talking about a major rushing threat. Can he get it done in short yard situations? Absolutely. He's been pretty effective, actually, in that role. Goal line, 3rd and short, 4th and short. But this is a spot where with the speed we saw Penn State flash off the edge last week, I mean, this is not a guy that's going to get out of the way from AK.
Yeah, it's going to be tough for them to sustain against that pass rush just for all 60 minutes on Saturday. So I think Penn State will have an advantage up front, have an opportunity to stop the run, especially if Mustafa plays anywhere near what he played last week. Should open some things up for some other guys. We'll see how Jesse Lucchetta responds at the second level of that defense. And still, I want to see Brandon Smith continue to grow into that position. I want to see Curtis Jacobs continue to do, you know, make the little strides that he made last week. And if they continue to do that, Penn State's probably got a pretty good linebacker core on their hands. So I'm excited to see those guys. And, you know, this is a three touchdown spread, right? I mean, this is something where we could talk about how great Ball State is and how things go, you know, how things have gone across college football and upsets and everything like that. But Penn State's the better team, more talented team, and they should try and assert their will on both sides of the ball on Saturday.
And I'm not buying the trap game conversation. I know it's come up a few times this week, and but this is a Ball State team that has won 8 games in a row. They were the conference champions at an FBS level of football last year. They shouldn't really sneak up on you. And oh, by the way, we mentioned this 6 times already. They're back in Beaver Stadium in front of a full crowd. If that's not motivation enough, then I don't know what is. I know Auburn comes to town. The whiteout's going to be there Saturday. But trust me, this is this might as well be the whiteout for these guys to get back in Beaver Stadium with their – I just don't buy the trap game. I don't know what your thoughts on there. I don't see that scenario playing out, but I suppose if we see Penn State come out and look a little sleepy and don't see that aggressiveness that stood out from the defense last week on Saturday, I'll be proven wrong. I just do not see that in the forecast at all.
Yeah, and I think that Penn State, if they're held up, it's going to be on their own doing. It's going to be inaccurate passes, not hitting the deep ball. You know, like I said, 30 of 43 last week for 367 yards for Connor Sampson of Western Illinois. Penn State should take advantage of that secondary. I haven't scouted the Ball State secondary extensively or anything like that, but those are pretty big numbers for Western Illinois to be putting up through the passing game. Dennis Houston, 12 catches, 237 yards and 2 touchdowns. So the potential for a wide receiver to go off, certainly there for Penn State.
Yeah, I'll simplify that. It's a mismatch between these Penn State pass targets and what Ball State is going to do with their secondary. Now, the other note here with what Penn State may be able to accomplish moving the ball downfield, and we're kind of looking at Penn State's offense here for a moment, but linebacker Brandon Martin, who was the co-defensive player of the year in the MAC last year, inside linebacker for Ball State, a little over 11 tackles per game during that 2020 season, sure sounds like he is in doubt of being available for this game due to a medical issue. There's been some reports coming out of Ball State from that beat. Nothing definitive at this point, but doesn't seem to be trending in the right direction. And if we're taking the best Ball State defensive player off the field against this Penn State team, that could be a major problem for the Cardinals.
Consider that an advantage for Penn State. I mean,
a bit of one.
It certainly helped Penn State last week. I mean, that Wisconsin's starting inside linebacker could not play. So you know, they'll take all of those they can get. You hate to sound unfair or anything like that, but if you can take the best defensive player off of the other roster, no matter what helmet they're wearing, what jersey they're wearing, you'll be pretty happy with that development. No offense to anybody that's injured, but they'll be pretty happy with the development of not having them on the field.
Right. And if Martin is indeed unavailable for this game for Ball State, you're probably circling Bryce Cosby, who's a safety for the Cardinals as their most effective playmaker on defense. He's got more than 40 career starts, 8 career interceptions, but I just don't see all 3 levels of this Ball State having the volume of playmakers to really keep up with Penn State. Although we are talking about an offense that had 1 first down in the first 30 minutes of football last Saturday. So before we get too far ahead of ourselves, on the offensive conversation, one other note here on defense. I'm with you, Brandon Smith, and to an extent, Curtis Jacobs, although he's less experienced. You want to see some legitimate separation between them and their opponents in this scenario, playing a group of 5 opponent, highly touted prospects, tremendous athletes, guys you are counting on to be foundational pieces and to lift your defense to a next level. There was a lot of flashes going on defense last week. Didn't necessarily get it from those two. I'm not saying they played poorly. You addressed this in your second look. You addressed this on the last episode. But in this circumstance, with the 22 guys you're going to be on the field in Beaver Stadium on Saturday, feels like you need to see Brandon Smith certainly look like a guy who is at a different tier when he's playing football.
Yeah, I mean, he looks like it just on the field in terms of stature. So you'd like to see him take that next step. I mean, there's a bunch of guys that you could say on both sides of the ball. I mean, you want to see on offense, Penn State execute more in the running game, get Noah Kane going, get Kevon Lee going, do some things in the inside zone where you can get move some guys out of the way. We expect to see Eric Wilson starting at guard just based on what we've seen. Well, I mean, that's not a secret based on what we heard coming out of the game last week.
Based on what we saw last week. Yeah.
Anthony Wiggin played 3 series, and that was it. it. That's the last we've seen of him. So would not be surprised to see Eric Wilson take on a more prominent role. But those guys up front, you know, there's certainly room for improvement there. And Cliff, there's room for improvement for Clifford. I mean, this is you don't want to say this is one where you got to come out and get your stuff in and get your execution down and not really go through the motions, but do what you have to do. I mean, you still want to see big plays. You still want to, chunk it up and see how many of those 70-yard touchdown runs you can get. But at the same time, this is an execution game. If you put yourself in the right spot to get there and then you follow through with it, the scoreboard should take care of itself.
Noah Kane found something there in the fourth quarter in Madison, and I know he was excited to find it again. And I really would love to see that momentum continue for him early in this game, get that ground game going early, not have to wait for the mid-game adjustments to get this offense taking off. And of course, beyond Noah Kane, who's ready to step up? Everybody's got something to prove in that room coming off of a game one. I know Kevon Lee certainly did not imagine going up to Madison and losing 3 total yards in his debut as a second-year player for Penn State. Devin Ford working in as the third running back. You mentioned John Lovett. We're not really expecting to see him out there. So can Keziah Holmes get on the field? A lot to look at there. Tight ends, that's another spot that you're saying, hey, Theo Johnson, Brenton Strange working against this Ball State defense, even Tyler Warren involved. What can you do out there? There should be mismatches galore. Can Sean Clifford take advantage of that? Can these guys assert themselves? Because we spent so much of this offseason saying, watch out for the tight ends. Wasn't the opener they were looking for either.
I mean, you look at that offense and you say that the receivers are probably the only one that can kind of rest on their laurels from week one. And, they still have things to take care of and things to get better at. So the tight ends need to step it up. Receivers, offensive line, quarterback, when you put up 0 points and a half, you're going to be ripe for criticism. And that's certainly fair in that point. By the way, to credit Kevon Lee, he did pick up about 25 yards in losing those 3 yards. So maybe he'll get going forward this time and be the type of back that we all know him to be.
It took me back a little bit to early in the 2018 season. We heard Franklin, he never had a 4-carry negative 3-yard game, but Miles Sanders early in the season, Franklin told us a few times, he's got to stop trying to bounce it, got to stop racking up all these yards behind the line of scrimmage, make the cut, go upfield and get it. And if you get 3 or 4 yards, that's great. It keeps us on schedule. That's what you want from Kevon Lee when he's out there. That's what you did not get against Wisconsin. But again, one of the best defensive fronts this Penn State defense will see. And now you got Ball State coming into Beaver Stadium. I guess the last thing here on offense to address is don't let turnovers open the door for the Cardinals. If you want to find out how trap games happen or big upsets happen, turnovers are often part of that unraveling. Some are going to say this is the kiss of death, but I'm going to say the stat anyways. Sean Clifford during the 0-5 start last year, 10 total turnovers. Sean Clifford during the current 5-game win streak for Penn State, 2 total turnovers, 0 turnovers in Madison. If he can keep that going, keep that momentum going, I have a hard time seeing Ball State threatening Penn State. If he lets loose with a couple interceptions, doesn't secure the ball when he faces pressure in the pocket like we saw last year, then he's going to contribute to the Cardinals having a chance to make things interesting late in the game.
I really don't have a complimentary point to line up with yours because that's pretty, no, I don't want to say it's obvious, but like you protect the football, you're going to be okay. And that's how that happens. It also, you can make that argument for special teams. I mean, this is a group that had a very good week in some aspects this against Wisconsin. You turn around, you had missed a field goal, missed an extra point. So that's something that's got to be shored up. You got to tackle, you can't let up. If you're AJ Litton, you can't let up going down the field to tackle a guy on a punt return, because all of a sudden, if you let up and you let a guy go by you, that could result in 6 points the other way. So special teams is something that they definitely, do need to clean some things up on, do need to sharpen some things up on as well. Jahan Dotson as a punt returner could potentially be a guy that finds some space on Saturday. I mean, you're playing a team that doesn't have the athletes that you have, and you could throw some of that defense out there. You saw, if you want to laugh, go back to Joey Porter on the first punt from Wisconsin, just freaking leveled a guy. It was beautiful. He just took a guy off his feet. I think you can see some of that this weekend with the bigger athletes and the better athletes on Penn State's special teams. So not turning the ball over, sharpening some things up on special teams, it's going to put yourself in an even better spot than you were coming into the game.
Yeah, I think Jahan Dotson is one to watch on special teams this week just because of what you said. He's just going to outclass guys. And if he gets some room to maneuver and start to line up his blocks, look out. He had a nice return last week. It wasn't a big one, but he had one that you saw. When Jahan Dotson has his opportunities, he's going to seize them this year. There's an abundance of confidence from this guy. Really curious if he'll get his hands on the football. I think Ball State's going to be doing quite a bit of punting. Do they look to avoid him? How does that maybe help Penn State with field position? A lot to look at there and their handling of several Penn State weapons. And not often do you see a nightmare scenario play out for the special teams and at the same time, like an all-time program performance happen from a punting game, but never do you see it relating to the same guy. So Jordan Stout wants to answer the bell. I'm sure he'll want to convert. I mean, of course he wants to, but nothing would feel better for him and nothing would feel better for Joe Lorig than to see him go out and look like the guy who won those three jobs. And that's not an easy thing to do. I mean, I don't know how many of the programs that are playing in FBS are asking one guy to do all three. That's something that to do some research on, I guess, here as we have Jordan Stout doing it. But that's a lot to ask, and as tremendous as he was as a punter, that execution between him, the snapper, and the holder, most importantly here, needs to be cleaned up against Ball State. There's no excuse if any of that resurfaces for game two, and if it does, then it warrants more of a storyline about what Penn State's kind of maybe what their Achilles heel could be moving forward. You don't want to have short yardage field goal attempts or extra points on that list.
Let's take it easy on the snappers here. Clearly, it was the
holders
issue, kickers issue. No snapper slander around
snapper
here.
Snapper slander.
As I just throw up all over myself. Also, be aware of Ball State's potential trickeration, especially on special teams, fake field goals, fake punts, different formations in extra points or field goals or things like that, because this is a team trying to steal one on the road. You got to do what they got to do.
Absolutely. And I'm curious, you know, when does Ball State maybe go for a fourth down conversion that you weren't expecting a team to normally, you know, try to convert? There's different scenarios that when you are a team like Ball State entering this kind of a situation as that underdog, you're going to be more willing to try some things out that you aren't accustomed to seeing in a typical, you know, Big Ten versus Big Ten matchup. So a lot to look ahead to here on Saturday. You know, we'll be back afterward with the post-game podcast, and we'll break down whatever we do see between Penn State and Ball State and Beaver Stadium. But now that we've covered offense, defense, special teams, before we get to predictions, we got a couple other things to get into. If you can, and you know, again, three touchdown kind of spread game here. If you can, great opportunity to get guys' feet wet. You didn't have a chance in 2020 to do much of that at all. So there's a lot of second-year players who need snaps. And then, of course, there's true freshmen as well. And I'll also throw out a name I haven't referenced here for a while, and I'm sure our listeners don't mind it, Taquan Roberson. Get him some live bullets.
Did not see that one coming. So, there's a lot of guys that have an opportunity. And this is, if it plays out the way that you think it'll play out, or we think that the spread would lend itself to playing out, then you should see some of those guys on the field. True freshman, Jalen Reed. We saw last week, Galen King and Caleb Brown, the only two to get on the field. But Jalen Reed at safety, Harrison Wallace and Liam Clifford at receiver, maybe some Kobe King with them being thin at linebacker, Landon Tengwall on the offensive line. So opportunities all over the place for guys, not only the freshmen, but also redshirt freshmen. Earlier I mentioned Fisher, Mulba, Vanover, and Izzard on the defensive line, but guys like Tyler Elston at linebacker, Olu Fashanu at tackle, guys will have an opportunity to get in there, and you might see some of those early rotations. This is something we've seen in the past. I don't want to say that they've coached for a blowout, but can't remember which game it was or which games it was in the last couple of years, but we saw guys entering the game before. Maybe you probably shouldn't throw the redshirt freshman out there just yet. Still a little bit in doubt. So wouldn't be surprised to see that once again on Saturday.
Yeah. It should be fun. We've been waiting to see some of these guys get their shot in games. It may come late. It may not come at all if Penn State doesn't handle its business, but a lot of those names are looking to maybe get in on the action. A couple other third year guys. I mentioned Roberson. He's a third year guy. Smith Vilbert, you know, hasn't played a ton of football. It sounded like he turned a corner this offseason. He got a bit involved against the Badgers on Saturday. Could we see more of him with Lucetta moving back to linebacker and maybe the floodgates opening a bit on the scoreboard? And then additionally, you have to look at Tyler Rudolph at safety, a guy that got some preseason praise from Anthony Poindexter and kind of mentioned him as competing for that job, which went to Jair Brown. This could be a great opportunity for him to get out there, maybe get some extensive run, which hasn't really happened for him throughout much of his career.
That's a good call. I like that. I like that one. I didn't think about Rudolph, but yeah, that's a good call. You want to see more of him to see what you're going to have after Brisker moves on next year.
The old third year freshman here in 2020 NCAA football. Recruiting. We buried the lead a little bit because so much of our podcast conversation also often leads with recruiting. Once we hit the season, gets on the back burner. But back in Beaver Stadium, it's not just the fans, it's not just the media and the coaches and the players. You're getting prospects back in the building.
Getting prospects, getting commits back to campus. You know, when that opened up on June 1st, a lot of those guys visited in the first week or two, and then kept coming back for camps, for Lash Bash at the end of July, and to get them back on campus to see really not necessarily their first game as a recruit, but you think about that. That's almost 2 years. That's a long time in a 17-year-old's development. This game that Caden Saunders is seeing is going to be a whole different angle than what he saw when he was just a sophomore checking things out. So Saunders coming back, Nick Singleton coming back, Drew Shelton, the Lackawanna kids, and Ken Talley coming up. So getting those guys on campus, it's boring. You know, nobody likes to talk about the committed guys coming back, but if you can keep those guys back or coming back and back and back, that makes a big difference in building this class. And we saw that this summer, and it certainly, manifested itself in July. Some other guys come in, but it's a bunch of 23 guys for the most part. British Mitchell, wide receiver from Miami's coming up. Rono Nuka from Philly Northeast, of course, Ken Talley's school. An interesting guy here from in-state, Joey Schlaffer. And I knew I would butcher that name.
Can you give me that again?
Michael Mennett's brother, tight end from Exeter, 6'6", or listed 6'6", 205. Really good athlete. He's got a bunch of Power 5 offers. This is a kid that Penn State's really looking at closely. You're really going to see where he stands on the board probably coming out of this week. I wouldn't be shocked if he was offered. I know they really like him, but with some of those in-state offers, especially for a guy that has the connections to the program that Joey has, if you offer him, you better be darn sure you want to take him. So he's an interesting one there. Couple other guys. Cooper Young is from Downingtown West. He's an offensive lineman. He's got some D1 offers as well. And then Quentin Martin, the highest rated guy visiting this weekend. He's number 40 overall in the 24/7 sports rankings for the 2024 recruiting cycle. This kid's good. He's really good. Bell Vernon plays running back, plays linebacker, plays safety, plays all over the place. Probably a linebacker at the next level. Might grow out of that safety. 6'2", 180 as a sophomore. So probably going to grow out of that safety, probably grow out of that running back spot, but he's also a pretty darn good running back. So not sure where he ends up, but he's a good one and one to get on campus as much as you can in the early stage of his recruitment, because this will be his first time on campus.
Yeah, just a sophomore. Quentin Martin has offers from Penn State, Pittsburgh, Rutgers, Virginia Tech, West Virginia, and he's just getting going with his sophomore year here. Sean, we will certainly give everybody the feedback from the recruiting. Four consecutive home games in Beaver Stadium. It's going to be a great opportunity.
I also have a feeling that conversation that we just had is going to be a little bit longer at this time next week.
Maybe. Yeah. It's going to be, you're going to have to roll out the scroll that reaches the floor with the list of names. And by the way, we do have a complete list and a little more context on what Penn State's preparing for this Saturday from a guest list perspective. Sean Fitz put that up online, 247.com, where you can, of course, catch up on all of our coverage from this game week before Penn State, Ball State. I think it's about time, Sean. Prediction time. Penn State, Ball State, 3:30 kick. One of these teams will be 2-0. Who's it going to be?
I think Penn State will be 2-0. I didn't write down a score yet. I know on that one. I think Penn State 22 or 23 point favorite right now. And that sounds about right. I'm going to go with 41-10. That's a little bit bigger than I would usually put, especially after Penn State went scoreless in the first half last week. You know, you got to see it from the offense, but they have the opportunity. And like I said last week, they hit a couple of those deep balls. It's really going to open some things up all over the place. I think Penn State will be able to run the ball a little bit more. Noah Cain will be much happier to see the Ball State front than he was to see the Wisconsin front. And, you know, maybe that offensive line gets going in the right direction.
Yeah, I'm going Penn State 38, Ball State 17. I like the 10. I just had the score written down this morning, so I'm going to stick with it. 38-17, I could certainly see Penn State holding Ball State to fewer points, but maybe Ball State can generate a play late when they're just trying to put up passes and trying to make the score look more respectable. But I do see this being a comfortable margin for Penn State. You know, by the time we get into the early stages, mid stages of the third quarter, where they will have opportunities to get some deeper rotations in there to get some guys some extra rest ahead of that Auburn game, because you did just come off a game where your defense in particular just played so many snaps. So that could be a really good opportunity. I think this is a bounce back game for the ground game. That's kind of where I focus here. I just feel like Penn State should be able to impose itself. You'd like to think that with Eric Wilson being the guy from snap one, he'll be able to hold on to that job. I don't know if we'll see Anthony Wiggin check in at some point. You'd like to think that until they no longer need Eric Wilson and they no longer need their starters at some point in this game, that Wilson can be the guy, he can hold it down, he can look like your starter moving forward. Nothing guaranteed there, though, of course, as he makes the leap from Ivy League football. So 38-17 is a pick for me. I think that they will be able to completely out athleticism the Ball State offense. I think this defense is going to flash in a big way. I think they'll create a couple turnovers. And at the end of the day, I believe the ground game is going to go 200 plus rushing yards, which when we talked about last week and their leading rusher had 3 yards going into the third quarter, that would be a major pendulum swing for that group.
You're going to make a stretch and say 200 yards on the ground. I'm going to make an even bigger stretch and say Jahan Dotson's going to have a really good game.
A really good game?
A really good game, yeah.
Okay, I'm with you there. We won't go into further detail. We can pretty much should we just add that tagline to the end of every prediction episode? We'll just say, by the way, Jahan Dotson's going to have a really good game. I really don't know who's going to have success stopping this guy consistently. It's really exciting to watch how far he has come. That's our conversation here for the pregame show. Paul State and Penn State will be back in Beaver Stadium for the matchup a couple hours beforehand. Hope to see you all out there at the stadium. We'll talk afterwards. Post-game podcast will be coming probably later into the evening with that 3:30 kickoff, but we're with you after every game to break it down. And once again, 4 episodes coming your way next week as we get ready for the whiteout and Game 3. On behalf of Sean, thanks to our producer, Lance Glenn, we'll catch up with you soon right here on the Lions 24/7 podcast, where you can find us on YouTube at Lions 24/7.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.